Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
You just heard an Indigify special about Alaska Native hip-hop artists. That's it for Stage and Studio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland's Folk Festival on Friday, January 10th and Saturday, January 11th, 6 to midnight at the Crystal Ballroom in Portland. Portland's Folk Festival is an all-ages celebration of folk and Americana music in Portland. Friday performers include Anna Tivol, Cedar Teeth, Glitter Fox, and more. Saturday performers include Horse Feathers, The Get Ahead, and more. Again, that's Portland's Folk Festival, Friday, January 10th, and Saturday, January 11th, from 6 to midnight at the Crystal Ballroom, 1332 West Burnside Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
When we meet, there won't be winter.
Coming up next is Art Focus, but first, this announcement from TriMet. This New Year's Eve, TriMet has you covered with free rides starting at 8 p.m. and late night max service until 3 a.m. No surge pricing here, just a free ride to ring in the new year and a safe way to get back home. Learn more at TriMet.org/New Year's. And now, Art Focus.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, had him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Laura Fritz. She's an installation artist, and her show Apex is on now at the Portland Art Museum through February 23rd, 2020. Thanks for coming to KBOO, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
And you've been on a show before, in the Julie days?
Yes, and then with Ava Lake as
and
well.
And the Ava days, right. Mm-hmm. So you're a very established artist, not just around town, but nationally and I think internationally. So Apex is a kind of it's like an honor, really. You're in the Northwest Gallery mm-hmm. with all the great Northwest artists that the museum has, and then they make this special space where a contemporary artist can like take over for a while. And your installation specifically reacts to that space you were given.
Right. Yeah. I actually spent the year previous. Looking at architecture, I took a little trip in the Midwest and studied different architectural methods and details. And I was responding quite a bit to that and also applying it to the specifics of the space in the Apex Gallery, mm-hmm. which is very original architecturally. It's not your average gallery. It's got a lot of different angles mm-hmm. and details
got
about
like
it.
Skylights and things.
Right, right.
What did you do in the Midwest? Like, what kind of things were you studying?
I was looking a lot at Frank Lloyd Wright and Mies van der Rohe, and then also I was looking quite a bit, even in Oregon as well, old Victorian houses. So I really liked the contrast between the old and the new, and I merged those types of vernaculars in the work that I was doing in this show. I made some very lean and minimalist types of tables, and I juxtaposed more ornate molding and some other pieces, and in one piece, I merged them together in void table, mm-hmm. where there's an opening in the front of the table, and there's molding used, and it's kind of an odd combination.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the listeners can imagine a lot of molding, like you know the kind of it's in little waves, you know, and it goes down. I don't know how you describe it. But you've put it together in different combinations. So this void table is like a very long-legged table, like a side table.
Right.
But sort of almost ungainly, like it's too tall. It might fall over if you bumped it. It's a very tall table.
It's pretty stable, though. It doesn't fall
over.
It
is? Okay.
But no one's tested it. Well, I hope they don't. But anyway.
And at the front, there's a slot, kind of like a letterbox. And you, because everything's black, you kind of crouch down, look in, stick your hand in. And it's just very dark in there.
Right.
Can't see a thing.
Right. And I designed it so that there's something, it always will feel a little off. Like it's too tall to be like a comfortable table to use for normal purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But the opening is right at, well, depending on how tall you are, it could be like your stomach or your chest area, most likely somewhere in your torso, that where you probably would feel kind of vulnerable, and there's this open dark space where you can't see what's inside.
So something might come and get you.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on what your frame of mind is for that type of situation. You might be a little ill at ease, or you just might be like, oh, that's very interesting. It just depends on the viewer's perspective.
Where, if you're coming in and you're on the left side of the exhibition, one of the first things you see is another table. It's called Void Vase or Vase. And it's a tall table, and it has like a square of molding on top. Kind of like a banister top, like a square that comes off, but it has a hole in it. So
right, yeah, that's a conglomeration of a few different moldings that I put together. And I was really interested in the opening at the top and looking in and seeing nothing but darkness. It's usually a vase is used to have something in it, like flowers or you know, maybe you can see through it, maybe it's translucent, but in this case it's solid and opaque, and inside it's dark. So, and the molding is being used in a way that you wouldn't normally see molding used. So it's used to, you know, make a three-dimensional object. So it kind of looks familiar, yet it's not how you're normally used to seeing that type of material.
Was that the thing you did with the molding on top of the table? Was that a separate concept from the table itself?
It was. I mean, starting out, I just was interested in making the vase, but you know, I had to have it on something. So this table was, I mean, I combine it with the table that I thought it would make sense on. So this table is virtually square, and you know, setting it a little off center emphasized the shape of the vase. I didn't want to have it too centered on the table.
I guess then it would look like kind of part of the table, right?
Right. Yeah, I want to look like it's inhabiting the table.
Do you have to write a bunch of notes for all this stuff? Like when you reassemble this, put the vase, you know, X centimeters off center?
Well, I just mostly made mental notes or I took photos. I have notes here and there when I'm developing the ideas. But then after I create the work, I just have it in mind.
Yeah.
Do it.
One of the other pieces is what's it called? It's high up on the wall on its own.
Little void piece of sconce. Molding.
Yeah, void sconce. It's just like, what's that thing doing up there? You know, it's like an insect that's kind of made its way up there. And it's under a spotlight. First I thought it had a light in it.
Right.
But then I realized it's just a spotlight lighting up a black object. Do you have to say, you know, is that where it is on the wall proportional? Like if you did it in another city, would you have to make it at a different height?
I would probably have to place it at a different height if I were to show it somewhere else. I I decided to place it exactly where it was just because of how the angles worked with the architecture and how it would affect you when you look at it. But it was designed to, well, what is interesting is sconce really is, means it's like a light fixture that is used to hold a candle or a light bulb. And so the void sconce just has black material that only reflects light. So it's not providing light. You have to light it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought that was a very interesting concept, turning sconce around the opposite way.
And in that same area, I think the biggest piece there is this tall box. You called it Alvarium 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tall box, kind of like a locker, like a single lock you would find in a break room or something. But it has a gap in the top, sort of eye height.
Mm-hmm.
And then inside there is light. As a light source, and it seems to be like it's coming through a metal grid or a mm-hmm. honeycomb shape.
Right.
And there are three bits of sconce in there which kind of break up the ceiling. And then there are these things flying around like in the light or in the video
mm-hmm.
That could be insects. So Alvarium is a...
Alvarium actually means beehive. And, well, what's interesting is some responses I've gotten from viewers is that it looks kind of like a bug zapper. It's just partially because of the light temperature of the video.
And what do you mean, the light temperature?
Well, it's kind of a cool colored, kind of bluish colored light. And then also, so the video is of honeybees. I had visited the Oregon State University Honeybee Lab, and they had allowed me to shoot some video of their bees. And so I was really interested in how they swarm, how they basically, it's like a murmuration, which is one species flying in coordinated patterns. And I found that really interesting to have that in a confined space where it looks like they're just inhabiting it.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that space happens to look like a place that might be unfriendly to them,
mm-hmm.
like a bug zapper, for instance.
So that movement you see of it's, I think a swarming is like thousands of bees in a clump in the air,
mm-hmm.
but when they're coming and going from a hive,
mm-hmm.
it's more like Kennedy Airport. They're like going
right,
around,
right.
picking their moment to go in and out. It's a bit more diffuse. So is the video taken from what kind of activity?
Well, it's a little bit of both. Well, they had taken some of the bees out of the hive, which it was something they would do anyway, and I was just allowed to be there and shoot the video. And it was how they react when they're taken out of the hive. They just fly around, and they eventually go back in. it was really interesting, and... well, the fact that I have them in the space that they're in, it's emphasizing the vulnerability of bees right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean in nature, the way they're dying off?
Right.
Right. Is that what they're studying at OSU?
Well, I don't know all of what they're studying, but that is part of it. That's mm-hmm. they have been noticing that.
Yeah. And they were fine with having an artist wandering around?
What was that?
They were fine with having an artist wandering around their lab?
Well, we were outside. We were accompanied. I didn't have like free reign.
Right. You set it up, but they were yeah, artist, whatever.
Yeah, it was an educational experience and they are involved in education. So it was a great experience.
Mm-hmm. I like this piece, Alvarium too, because there's no handles on it, and it's like, how would you get your fingers in there and open it up? You know, mm-hmm. you're gonna stick your hand in the big hole at the top, or I know you work with the feeling of unsettling mm-hmm. as a common theme, and that is kind of unsettling, that piece.
Right.
Is that the only emotion you're trying to evoke with that?
Well, I guess it's more about evoking the process of exploring and curiosity in the viewer, and the process the viewer will go through if they are not sure about what's going on. So it's basically how we handle the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And often we would create our own narrative and try to just fill in the blanks if we don't have enough information. And each viewer will have their own personal response and feeling.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever just sit there and watch people, what they do?
I have liked watching people looking at my work, and it's almost like a psychological experiment where the viewer is participating.
Mm-hmm. Is that any use to you in the making of future work?
I would say everything is of use to me in making a future work. I mean, it will affect me and cause me to consider, you know, what would another interesting step be.
Mm-hmm. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Laura Fritz. Her show Apex is on now at the Portland Art Museum in the Northwest Wing, and it runs through February 23rd, 2020. Another piece, so you use a lot of molding and you mm-hmm. kind of messing with it, right? Molding's normally stuck in a corner, you know,
right.
It's like a skirting board kind of thing. But you take a piece and you seem to have sliced it up, and in the very middle there's a long strip, and then you put mirror in there so you can kind of peep in and get a very thin reflection of yourself. Mm-hmm. I managed to take a selfie in the mirror with showing just one eye, because that's all I could fit.
Mm-hmm.
How long did this take to make, this one piece?
That one piece, I made a few different versions of it, and it's actually made of a few different moldings joined together. I made the first version and brought it in to see how it would respond to the architecture, and decided it needed to change. And there were a couple different iterations before what I settled on. I wanted to emphasize the verticality of the space, and the thinner the slice of mirror, the better. I wanted it to be just wide enough to reflect enough light so that you'd see something out of the corner of your eye as you walk by,
mm-hmm.
and maybe catch a glimpse of your part of yourself.
How wide is it, the bit of mirror?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't have the measurement off the top of my head, but probably the visible part of the mirror is probably like maybe a half inch,
mm-hmm.
maybe
right.
less. I'm trying to visualize it right now.
Yeah, and the whole piece itself is what, like 3 or 4 feet tall?
I would say about 2.5 to 3
feet.
Oh,
okay. So it's just on the wall, this vertical black mm-hmm. thing with a slice of mirror.
Right.
Did you spend a lot of time sort of looking at it and thinking, does it need a mirror or?
Oh, well, one thing is originally I was thinking it would be nice if it had some kind of moving flickering going on, because I was thinking about it as something that you would catch movement of out of the corner of your eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that a mirror would be the best option because it would respond to the flickering of someone walking past and, you know, getting in between the lighting and it, or, you know, a flash of color depending on what someone's wearing. And so as a sconce, it would provide light, but only in a passive way.
Mm-hmm. Was your investigation of Victorian homes where this decision to use sconce material came from, and molding?
The molding I've been fascinated with over the past several years. I didn't really have it in mind to be a sconce necessarily, but it turned out that way as I kept changing the design.
Mm-hmm. It's called Sconce 2, mm-hmm. right? If you're looking for it when you're there. So you make all this stuff yourself, right? You make the tables and
everything? Yeah, I
do. Right? So you got a wood shop somewhere?
In my studio, I have a lot of woodworking tools.
Mm-hmm. You're from the Midwest?
I am. I'm from the Chicago area.
Okay. Do you ever think, just outsource all this, let someone else do it?
Well, I'm really particular about how I would want it to be. And I actually enjoy making the objects, so I will normally do them myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was only one time that I actually hired someone to work on something, and that was I had a couple light tables that I had designed and built for a show in the Des Moines Arts Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I had they were so long, and it was like the tops of the table needed to be made a certain way with equipment that I didn't have. So I hired someone mm-hmm. to do that.
Did it work out?
It worked out great. But that's the only time I really hired someone to do my work.
So these tables, they're pretty simple, right? They're wooden, and you paint them black.
Right.
If you'd have outsourced that, do you think it would have come back like the wrong shade of black, or the wrong shape or something?
I don't know about that. I haven't really considered hiring that out. But yeah. I enjoy the process.
Right. And do you have to make a lot of them before you get the right one? Do you have to trash a lot of stuff?
Well, I try not to do that because it can be really time-consuming and expensive. So I often will make a model first out of foam core. Hmm. So I do a lot of model making first.
How do you make a model?
Well, I have some black foam core. I cut it to the size I'm considering. I set it up in a situation that is as close as possible to where it will be exhibited, and then I just narrow down the design from there.
Mm-hmm. What did you cut it with?
Oh, just an X-Acto knife and a straight edge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I did a lot of that for the hanging video in the back room.
Mm-hmm.
That I guess we'll get to.
Well, let's talk about the hanging video. It's the piece is called Convocation.
Mm-hmm.
So it has its own little room, and then it's a five-sided shape. What do you call that?
A pentagon.
But like in 3D, like a cylinder with five sides.
Oh, yes, yes. And it has, it's in two parts visually. It's got a wider upper part, mm-hmm. and then it's got a lower part that has holes in it. Two holes on each side, and video is projected from within the larger piece into the smaller piece, mm-hmm. and then it's splayed out onto the walls.
So if you can picture this, it's hanging from the ceiling. It's like a big, kind of like a big trash can. It's black, and then it has a smaller bit on the bottom, and there's holes, and the light is bouncing down and then off mirrors mm-hmm. out through these holes, and these holes make five circles on the walls. Did I count right?
Well, there's five sides, and there's two circles on each side. So there'll be like 10 circles on the walls.
And then on the floor, what you got?
Also, some of the video escapes onto the floor. And that's more direct video, not splayed off of mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
So it engages the walls and floor and ceiling.
Mm-hmm. So you got like circles on the wall, ovals on the floor,
mm-hmm.
and in this light there is video. There's things going on. What's going on?
Right, that is video I shot of the Chapman Swifts, and I was really interested in their activity, the murmuration, again, which is basically they're swarming in a common movement.
This, same as bees. So if you're a newbie in town, go to Chapman Elementary School in Northwest. They have a big chimney, this time of year, like September, the swifts roost. They come in every evening at dusk. They fly in a big circle and they go in kind of one by one. And everyone sits out there and drinks wine and kids mm-hmm. lie down the grass. And we all watch nature happening. So, it's kind of like the bees, mm-hmm. you know, they're kind of picking their moment.
Right.
Their kind of movement.
Well, I was fascinated by their movement because they looked like they could be insects or birds. And actually in the video, I don't really make it obvious that they're birds. And I've heard many different interpretations of what people think they are. I've heard insects, I've heard bats, I've heard birds.
Hmm.
So it's really interesting to me, the response.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really, for me, about the fact that they're birds. It's more about the movement, the activity.
Mm-hmm. What did you shoot exactly for this? The sky or the very close-up kind of mouth of the chimney?
Let's see. I think kind of closer to the chimney itself. I did a few different methods, so I think I've used more than one in the actual video.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some parts of it where it zooms in a little closer, and you can actually see larger shapes. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's interesting. It gradually shifts in and out.
Mm-hmm. How do you expect people to enjoy this piece of art? I stood around and looked at it and walked around mm-hmm. and around and then, you know, went off to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Should there be a chair? Well, there isn't a chair and there's no music. It's like,
no.
What's the feeling you're getting at in the viewer?
Well, I guess it depends on the viewer. Each viewer will have their own take, but it's more like you're observing activity that's going on around you. You're not necessarily participating in it because you're obviously not swarming. Although people do swarm, but a little differently.
Do they? Where have you seen any swarm? I guess at the anti-fascist riots, marches and things, you see swarms.
Well, yeah, there's, you know, human beings also engage in this type of behavior, like basically with, you know, different groups and Facebook and...
Oh, okay.
There's, you know, a growing interest in concern about how your behavior is part of the whole, part of your group, rather than just an individual behavior. And that's also what I'm trying to convey with the swarming
mm-hmm.
or the murmuration.
Right.
So the viewer could feel like they're part of it or similar in some way, or they could just spend time wondering, you know, what am I looking at? Or also the form itself that I'm presenting this, that it's projecting out of, is in relation to the architecture as well. The angles of the pentagon correspond a little bit to the arches in the ceiling and the different angles in the architecture.
Mm-hmm. Right, so it kind of fits in, or it echoes right. in an unexpected way.
It fits in and stands out at the same time, which mm-hmm. is what I was trying to do.
Right. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Laura Fritz, an installation artist, and her show Apex is on now at the Portland Art Museum through February 23rd, 2020. Thanks so much for coming back to KBOO, Laura.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Welcome to 2020 Talks. where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
The core values of this nation, our standing in the world, our very democracy, everything that has made America, America is at stake.
Of an unprecedented grassroots campaign of 1 million active volunteers in every state in our country.
This is the fight of our lives, the fight to build an America where dreams are possible, an America that works for everyone.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, of the 30-plus Democrats who ran for president this year, are the only ones with double-digit national polling averages. Today's the last day of 2019. Who will make it to November 2020? Today's also an important fundraising deadline for all candidates. Warren's fourth quarter goal was lower than her previous ones, and she's changed her stump speech to be mostly Q&A with potential voters. Yesterday, 3 months after a heart attack, Sanders released his doctor's letters saying he's fit for the presidency, and Biden said he would consider putting a Republican on his ticket. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg trails behind in the national average, but has first place in Iowa and recently in New Hampshire.
I recognize the audacity as a Midwestern millennial mayor, more than a little bold at age 37 to seek the highest office in the land.
Despite facing an impeachment trial in the Senate and partisan divides seeming the highest in most Americans' lifetimes, President Trump's re-election efforts roll on.
Keep America great. We're going to keep it better than ever before.
The president's behavior did attract a few Republican challengers, former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld and former Illinois Representative Joe Walsh.
If you elect me as your president, you never again will have to feel exhausted or tired on account of your government.
I'm a conservative. I'm running because Donald Trump is not who we are. In fact, he's the worst of who we are.
Some Democrats entered late. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick in November, and others dropped out early.